If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. On this episode of Nostalgia Stories, WGN Sisters Station Antenna TV sits down with Hal Linden and Max Gale from Barney Miller. Join us as they discuss how they got along with each other and the cast from the legendary television show. What did the two of you learn from acting with each other?
The first thing you said is, I don't know. I mean, that's agnostic. That's the, in order, well, what's the first thing? To growth is the admission of ignorance. You can't go anywhere until you say, I don't know this. And I think that's the first thing that Barney saw, and is this kid wants to learn everything.
And I think our relationship was a lot about that, because I learned a lot from everybody, but particularly with Hal. And our, just the more we connected, and
right, yeah,
the
more they would write
these wonderful scenes for us in the office, and I thought of it as a big brother way. A lot of people saw it as a father-son, but we weren't that far apart. You know? But there was a dimension in there, you know, that Talmud, that sense of Talmudic justice, was kind of something Wojo was looking for in understanding what the world was about.
Describe your experience working with Ron Glass.
Ron was the most experienced actor on that set. Most trained. He was a Shakespearean actor. He could really do it. He had been a part of the Milwaukee. Guthrie Theater. I mean, he had real background. I didn't. I was in the musical theater. Anyway, there was a show where he running down an alley chasing a perp with a gun in his hand was shot at by a uniformed police officer who saw a black man running down an alley with a gun in civilian clothes. Ron was the character, outraged, and rightly so, outraged. My job was I didn't want a problem between detectives and uniformed officers. I was to dampen keep it under control. And Ron was furious at me for not realizing what an outrage it was.
The character, Ron Harris.
And he storms out, and he's gone for most of the show, and at the end of the show he comes back, and the script had it, he comes in and kind of apologizes for overreacting so that we could finish the show.
And we spent most of the show saying, have you heard, anybody heard from Harris?
But, you know, he wasn't there. What, you know? He came, we were ready to shoot that last scene, and it was already like 1 o'clock in the morning. Normally the last scene was 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And he came in, and we kind of set the, staged it, and we started the shoot, and then Ron Glass slammed his hand down and said, what the hell am I apologizing for? I'm the one who got shot at. And there was a silence on the set. And
he wasn't like always looking, I'm looking for that black edge that I, you know, he didn't, that wasn't his approach.
No, not at all. And there, as I say, there was this silence on the set. And I said, the man is right. He's not, what's he apologizing for? And Danny, I remember, came on, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, the cast sat down around that Ron's desk, and Danny said, "Okay, what do you think you would say?" And we created a scene on Golden Time, the cameras were playing poker, and Danny said, okay, let's create a scene with that you're happy with, that you think you would be right. And I don't remember the scene, but that scene was created right there, to find a way of him not having to be the culprit when he wasn't.
I think there was a shift, you know, after, or maybe during, but, you know, after World War II, when a lot of different groups that didn't connect with each other, you know, there was like the Rat Pack, and there was, you know, there was a sense of people joking with each other about background. If you see now on YouTube or something, you know, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin joking with Sammy Davis Jr., it can be kind of embarrassing.
Right.
You know, because there's like, oh, well, we're all joking, because at that time they were just saying to have this guy on the stage with them is a big line to cross for a lot of people, you know. Some people are trying to get that line going again, you know? And I think that was the sensibility more that was going into the original writing. And Ron, who did not want to just be waving the blaxploitation flag, but he certainly had his sense of what the world was about. And it was, for us, it was like, so
how do we step, take the next step? It was a very fascinating moment.
What dynamic did Gregory Sierra bring to the show?
Gregory was different.
Gregory had come to the show. He'd been...
He was the most known name when we started. He was bigger than me. Nobody ever heard of me or you or even, yeah. Well, Abe maybe. But Gregory had done very well on Sanford and Son. And the network had promised him a pilot. And until they got one, they asked him to do this. So he was kind of, I don't know if he was too anxious to do it. I know that he was not thrilled about playing Puerto Rican again with the accent. That was a running, yeah. We knew that. He wanted to get out from under being constantly the Puerto Rican.
He'd done Shakespeare.
He was trained an actor as Ron was, I think. I don't know, but he had much more background than anybody else on that set. And I think he came unwillingly, I don't know, cautiously into the group. He didn't know whether this was a show that was going to show him off for his show or how long he was going to be on it. There's a strange dynamic,
yeah,
definitely.
Because he was torn, because he had those issues going on, but he also had a wonderful heart.
Oh yeah,
he was into that part of acting where you really are in with each other, you know. So he didn't, you know, it was a difficult time for him, and unfortunate, I think, that his career didn't. They did eventually do a spinoff, but Danny couldn't see writing without him using the accent. Danny couldn't see how to make him funny, and Gregory was determined not to be. Spend the rest of his life speaking with an accent that he didn't really have, and
it was a tough time for him.
What was Jack Sue's approach to playing his character Nick Yamana?
Jack Sue used to be concerned with whether he often had these wonderful tags at the end of the scene. So while we're rehearsing, we'd be working out the timing of who's moving here where. When we get it, then we'd go, okay, let's try that, you know. And so he kind of sometimes had the thought that people weren't, because we wouldn't do his line, you know. So he had that thought sometimes that he wasn't. And I personally remember, because I got more and more involved, I'd come to connect with a whole lot of people in the American Indian movement and stuff, and I think Jack, maybe more than anybody, got that, because he had his own experience of being put in the camps, you know, during World War II.
Right.
You know, and only getting out because he signed up to go, like a lot of young Japanese men went in the army in Europe. And so he, you know, he was very...
When Jack died, which was during rehearsal, I remember we got the call that he had died. There's about four episodes that he was not in, and on the board he was listed as being at the DA's office or something, you know. We didn't know that he, I didn't know that he was in the hospital, even. Anyway, when the word came that he died, Danny told us that he had esophageal cancer, which was very common to Asians, and that he was in the hospital all this time, and he didn't want anybody to know. He didn't want... And so when Jack died, there was a major question of how to handle it. I just thought it was an opportunity to see how the characters would react to Jack's, to Nick's death, Nick Giamana's death, that we could have a show about how he wasn't really at the DA's, he was in the hospital and he died, and have all the characters react to that fact. I thought that would be a good episode. And I remember we didn't know what Danny was going to do. He came in that Monday morning and Danny said, I decided I did not want to profit from Jack's death. I did not want to take advantage of it. We're going to do a clip show, and I would like each of you to decide what you want to say about Jack Sue. And we all had our own speeches. We sat around, I remember the desk, Jack's desk, Giamana's desk, and we, and there was clip show of his scenes of Jack Sue, and each one of us got to...
I remember that
eulogize him as, in a way.
I remember that they had something written for us.
Not for me.
And we kind of got started because I remember saying, "I don't want to say this. I want to say what I want to say."
Oh yeah.
And then
I say, so do I.
You know.
I don't remember. I remember. I went home and thought, what really struck me of Jack Sue? And I'll tell you what I said. That was very interesting because Jack Sue did indeed have a history of being in the internment on the West Coast when the Japanese were put into camps. And he got out of it by joining the army, and he served in Italy, I believe. His reaction was never bitter. Now, I don't know what was inside Jack Sue's head. I don't know how much bitterness and anger there was in there, but he never was overtly bitter. That always got me. After what he went through, he treated everything with humor. If there was a problem, humor, never bitterness. And that, I thought, was something I should learn from him, that you don't have to be, spend your life angry at somebody who did something you didn't like. You could accept it and move on. And that was Jack. Jack treated everything, all the problems, with humor.
What was James Gregory's career like before Barney Miller?
Jimmy Gregory was the most seasoned, certainly, actor. Well, he was older than most of us. But he was not known for comedy. Jimmy had a major movie career, but he always played a senator or a judge. Some deep...
Yeah. World War II, smoke them if you got them, head
yeah,
sergeant.
Yeah, always that. But I guess Danny knew him personally, I guess. I don't know. I had never met him till we were on the set. But he would come in totally prepared. He not only knew every line that he had, but every piece of business, the little... Bow tie was his, everything he created, and exactly. We, on the other hand, were kind of loose about everything because we didn't see the, you know, Monday morning was the first time we heard what we were going to do. And we'd, hey, how about this? Try this. You know, how about, we were kind of loose. And he was a little...
Eye-rolling
about it. You know, oh boy, these actors, they don't do their homework. You know, he was kind of the... but he was so successful, they got his own show. called Detective School. He was the teacher, but they made the mistake of hiring, instead of actors as his students, they hired comics, stand-up comics. And so I never saw the show, but I understand it was a disaster. It lasted only about 3 or 4 episodes, and they threw it off. But I remember that the year that he was gone, because he was doing this other show, it was maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, we were still working, and here came Jimmy Gregory to the set. "Hey, Jim," we all welcomed him back. "How's it going?" You know, and he was a little, had a few too many. A little, you could tell he was just a little. And he said, "I just came by to watch some actors work." He was just couldn't handle it with a whole bunch of undisciplined stand-up comics who were each doing their own thing. No unity in their purpose. And so he kind of had a different view when he came back. He was more accepting of our looseness, would you call it? I don't know.
Why did Linda Lavin have such a small role in the show?
She was going to be a regular, but they didn't sign the contract or something. Yeah. What was it?
Well, I remember hearing from some of the other producers that they'd been telling Danny, sign her. And he was just holding off for some reason, and then she got Allison.
But I'll never forget Linda.
Me neither.
There was a problem that she brought in the guy who caused the problem. I don't remember the situation. But, she solved the case, And everybody was, when he walked in, "Hey, hiya, Jack." We all knew him because he was a confessor. There are people who confess to everything. They just want the attention. And he was a confessor. So he had confessed to her, and she thought she had the whole thing solved. And she brought him in, and then everybody was like, don't. And the way she handled it, she had a bag, a over-the-shoulder tote bag of some kind. And the camera was on, she looked around, and she opened the bag, put her head in it, put her head in the bag, and I just got it out that she had screwed up. But Linda was ready to be a regular.
Behind the scenes, which actor was the class clown?
Ron Carey originally appeared on Barney Miller as, I think the episode was called The Mole. He was a guy who, got in next door to a bank, got into the basement and dug his way under into the bank to steal money. And he was arrested. I remember this character. He was all full of dirt because he'd been under, and he kept coughing on everybody. Danny loved it, loved him. Now, once again, the original cast of Barney Miller did not have a comedian in it. We were all actors. No professional stand-up comics who had characters of their own or bits that they did. It was all actors. Ronnie was the first stand-up comic, but he accomplished the mole so, I guess, ideally for Danny, that Danny decided to hire him, and he brought him as the, I suspect originally, occasionally, he would come up from downstairs and he really wanted to be a detective. That was the character. And he created that exit, that walk out the doors thing that he did. And he was the class clown. Right?
Yeah.
He was the guy who came in. He always had either candy or Danish or something that he'd bring for everybody to have, and he was the one who would be end up standing on a table doing a funny bit. He kept us all laughing.
Especially in the wee hours.
After...
He had something that he couldn't quite bring it down into a comedy act. I mean, he had it, but it wasn't... But he would go off, and he could have this operatic voice he could go into, you know, and a lot of those qualities that were in Levitt. And in the wee small hours sometimes when we were sort of wearing down.
Right.
And he would go off on one of his, you know, things and just wake everybody, had a fresh breath.
Died much too young.
What was Steve Landsberg like when the cameras weren't rolling?
Steve was a stand-up comic who, by the way, was the exact opposite of Dietrich. Steve was an outrageous, over-the-top stand-up comic. And he appeared for the first time as a perp. He had stolen Bibles from hotel rooms and was standing with a priest's collar selling them on street corners. I remember. And Danny just came up with the idea. With Steve was there. They were looking for someone to... They had to have someone to replace Abe. Abe was about to do his spinoff, and he had to retire to do that. So they knew they had to cast somebody in that seat. And I guess Steve was that good that he... And the way he... It was a very understated character. And Danny picked up on that and gave him that, created a character that really knew everything.
Which gave him a way to lay a lot of pipe, as they say, a lot of exposition.
Oh, yeah.
You might need to set up the show because Dietrich could always have all this information in a tight paragraph.
What unique advice did Abe Vigoda have for other cast members?
Everything that Abe did, you have to recognize, Abe was sat in the only chair that faced upstage. Therefore, all of his scenes, well, most of his scenes that where he, when he was sitting in the chair, had to be pickups. After the scene was shot, you had to come around, build a false wall behind him, and do the pickup. So Abe became, that was the definition of Abe for me, was him sitting in that chair and doing the scenes. And it was just reaction shots or single lines. And he would do them until Danny liked it.
Yeah. One thing I remember with Abe talking about his way of working was it wasn't necessarily to see the sort of rhythm in the line. I remember him saying, "You learn the line, and then when you say it, you let your mind be free as a bird." and where it really, I remember the show where the guy who, somebody comes out of the bathroom, the guy from out of the cell, put him in the bathroom, big, yeah, tall actor. He was about 6'6". And somebody comes out, you know, and says, he's dead. And he took the bulb out of the socket and stuck his finger in there and put his foot in a toilet. And he electrocuted himself. And Abe's, Donnie Fish's line was, "I didn't realize he was that tall." and you said, "We've never had anybody die here. How do we play this? We should think about how are we approaching this." And Abe said, "I know. We should play it with a loose hat," which I thought was a great metaphor.
A loose hat.
You know, kind of like you got the fedora down. Where were you on the night of? Or, hey, we should go off and get married. You know, that different with a loose hat. And I remember you and Danny looking at each other like, what in the hell is he
What's
about?
A loose hat? Originally, the part was played by an Italian.
Sal, somebody.
I can't remember his name. Yeah. In the original pilot, it was an Italian who sat there. And that was the part that Abe Vigoda auditioned for, because he was just coming off Godfather. He was just playing Tessio, was that the name of the guy? Yeah. And Danny took one look at him and said, "No, I think I got a better idea," and immediately created Abe's part.
What I heard from Abe was that Danny said, "You look like you have hemorrhoids. You have hemorrhoids?" And Abe said, "What are you, a producer or a doctor?" He, you know, one thing about Abe is that he was much more younger and more spry than you would
imagine.
He was quite a handball player.
Oh,
when you played him.
When we did the first pilot, the PR guy said, I want to do a photo shoot of the two of you. And so he took us to a gym. And we were walking on treadmills together, and we were really doing weights together, and they were taking pictures and whatnot. And then Abe said, I see they got an indoor handball court here. You want to play a little handball? I figured I can, you know, he was older than me. Not that much older, by the way.
I think he looked like an old man at 16.
He just looked very old. I said, sure, let we'll play handball, to take pictures. He killed me. He was an excellent handball player, not a good. There were the handball courts in down in Greenwich Village. There were handball courts, public handball courts, and this is where he used to play. And he was a killer.
Thanks for listening. Check out other episodes of Nostalgia Stories at WGNRadio.com/AntennaTV. Or for video versions of this podcast, go to YouTube.com/AntennaTV.